So we're going to talk about pricing, which I'm sure for some of you is a subject of great interest, at least I hope so. I'm joined by Brad Garrigus. We're going to be a team today. We're going to do this presentation here at this morning, and then this afternoon at 3, Brad's going to lead another presentation which should complement what we're going to talk about now. And to continue the baseball analogy, I'm going to do the play-by-play this morning. Brad's going to do the color commentary. And then this afternoon, we're going to switch that around, and Brad will take the lead. So ASO pricing. As we go through this, the agenda for this is I want to talk a little bit about moving from HMO cost to ASO price. I want to kind of unpack that for you and go through it a little bit. I'm also going to do some benchmarking for you. I've done some pretty significant pricing studies. I do pricing models for clients. I've done some pretty significant pricing studies in the last 2 years, and I want to share some of that benchmarking with you. Am I reverbing here? Say it again?
Do it in the center.
Oh, okay. Okay, hopefully that's better. So some benchmarking from the some studies I've done for both TPAs and BUCA, and also thinking about your own pricing, and then talk about value proposition and pricing in it from a competitive point of view. And so I'm going to get started, but I want to ask you to think about what the ASO pricing is in your market. And just keep it in your mind. Just come up with the number. What's the competitive benchmark in your market for an ASO and or a TPA? So hold that thought in your mind. And then what your own price point is right now. And then when we get to start to get into this, I'm going to ask you to contribute, if you'd like, how perhaps your price point, your competition differs from what I'm presenting. Okay. So I've very often start with talking to plans, and a lot of times the CFO is involved, and start at this, what I call this sort of freak out point. And the freak out is, plan says, our base cost to operate a PPO fully insured is something like $48 per member per month. Sound familiar? That comes from the Sherlock studies, so it should be reasonably familiar to you. And the freak out is that sales is telling the CFO that the market, TPA pricing, is $18 PEPM. That sounds pretty bad, right? But wait, it gets worse. No, it gets worse. Because 48 PMPM, I'm being a little arbitrary here, let's say translates into $80 PEPM on a cost basis. And $18 on a price basis, assuming a 10% margin, which is roughly industry-wide the profit margin in the TPA business, by the way. So when I apples to apples it, the freak out is, how in the world am I going to get from $80 PEPM to $16 PEPM? That just seems an impossible hill to climb, right? Has anybody been through this process? You know, I see some heads going up and down.
Pretty much every day.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah. My good friend, the chief financial officer, comments on this nearly every day.
So what I'm going to do in the next few slides is unpack this a little bit and hopefully walk some people off the ledge and maybe help you when you go back home with your CFO about how this maybe isn't quite as bad as it seems. One thing to start to think about is that in your books of business, there is a hierarchy of costs. We know, for example, that Medicare Advantage has a higher cost basis than other lines of business. And in fact, ASO, as I'll show you in a second, for health plan alliance plans as well as for generally in the marketplace has a lower cost basis. So there's something about ASO that appears to be inherently a lower cost in terms of administration than fully insured. I mean, can anybody want to contribute? What are some of the factors that might contribute to that? We heard this morning that premium tax goes down. Go ahead, yeah.
Compliance issues,
yeah.
You don't have to worry as much about enrollment eligibility issues. You have the frontline HR staff acting as those people on your behalf.
Excellent point. So there's some inherent things that drive that. And then on the other side of the equation, you might have heard, well, TPAs are only charging $15 or $20, and you're like, well, how the heck do they do that? But the truth is, and industry studies have shown, that the typical TPA generally earns double the revenue of its base price. And how it does that is by selling additional services, and I'm going to unpack that for you, too, in a minute, okay? So this is Sherlock again. Two things that you can get out of this slide. We've got independent provider on that's us, Blues, and the big national plans. Two things you can get from this slide. One is that you can see across these different types of health plans that the reported cost of doing ASO is roughly half of doing fully insured, right? You see that? And you can see that as between plans like ours and the national and the BUCAs, that relationship is pretty steady. So it confirms this notion that the underlying base cost, we're on a cost basis now, not a price basis, the cost basis, that there is a consistent difference between the cost of administering ASO against fully insured. So now we're starting to see that there is some industry-wide rationale that remember that crazy disparity, 80 versus 16. We're starting to see that, well, maybe there's some basis as to why it moves, those two prices start to move toward each other, okay? So that's one step. Now, let's move over to price, okay? So we're going to go from cost to price. Now, what you see here are two different pricing studies that I did involving over 100 different data points. These are actual sold cases in the market. And the blue line, this blue here, the lighter blue, are the Blues, our Blues plans. And the orange line are national carriers, United, Cigna, and Aetna, essentially. And the price points are substantially similar. That again, sold in the market, prices in the high 30s. And I would submit to you, at least based on my work, that that is the current market price for ASO that you can think about as a benchmark. Now, go back to where we started. I asked you to think about your price points that you're competing against, because I understand that there are local variations, right? So did anybody want to volunteer? You thought about, I'm asking you now, the price points that you're competing against in your market. What are they? I mean, I'm saying high 30s. What are you seeing? Anybody want to volunteer?
And that's
PEPM. Yeah, sorry, yes, PEPM. Thank you for that. What do you guys see in the market in terms of ASO?
In Tennessee, I think it's more.
Oh my goodness, you're killing me over here.
$50. I have $50 here, yeah.
They're administering up in the 50, 60s.
Okay, so far 39 to 50, 60s outliers, yeah.
60 range.
60, okay. Good. Others?
30s?
Rick, perhaps a comment from the Oregon market. This is very consistent with what we see. A couple of notes, though. The TPA market in Oregon used to be much more robust, but a lot of the old mom-and-pop TPAs, particularly with some of the infrastructure requirements around information technology, have kind of been kind of gone away. A lot of consolidation has occurred in that market. So it's somewhat rare that we now see that 1750 as frequently as we once did. But a lot of our less sophisticated brokers will start to gravitate to that because it's a known fixed cost, right? In the Blues plans, in the national plans, probably about 5 years ago, the number was probably north of 50, 50, 60, $70 in some cases. But within the last 2 or 3 years, those national plans have become much more competitive, and they're now routinely in the high $30 range.
Right. So anybody else want to contribute? Yeah.
$50 to $60, and then they reduce that admin by a guaranteed rebate.
Guaranteed rebate.
Yeah, and that's what they go with.
Guaranteed rebate on?
Pharmacy rebate.
Pharmacy. Okay, yeah. Great. Okay, good. So let me summarize what we just heard. You heard me, I reported from a couple of studies I did, real market prices, what customers bought in the high 30s. You guys,
I just had a question. You know, it's a little bit misleading because I have a loud voice.
But the podcast, Jerry.
I'm sorry, I apologize. It doesn't matter. It matters what's in that fee, right?
Right, that's exactly
like
where I was going.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Right.
Access fee, for instance, is that in or out?
Okay, that's exactly where I'm going. Okay, so what we heard from our study right here of you guys is that you got that there's some high 30s, you see that, but you see a range going up from there into the 60s and even 70s, and perhaps a trend down, which I absolutely agree with. The trend is downward. And I want to talk a little bit about what happens from this price point of the high 30s to into the 40s and 50s. What's going on there? And I'm going to unpack that one as well in the next couple of slides. But let me just, before we leave this one, let's talk about this crazy 1750. Again, that's a real number from the market, right? That was sold prices. Price that TPA services are sold at. That also seems like an outlier, right? But I'm going to go to the next slide and try to do this, bring this into an apples to apples comparison. Can you guys see this? Yeah, and I think you have the slide too. So what I've done here is I take TPAs, and you guys know that one of the developments in the market now is that TPAs have access to Buca networks on a lease basis, right? Everybody knows this? This is new in the last 5 or so years. Big development in the industry. So in part of my pricing studies, I also looked at what were the network access fees charged by the Bucas. In this case, the large national carriers and the Blues. And again, real numbers from the market. Large national carrier access fee, $17.50 PEPM. Blues, around $21. Okay, so what happens then, if I add in the basic components, the big three, the core three services that are provided under ASO, the core three, are the administration, meaning paying the claims and answering the phone, et cetera, the access to the network, and basic UR, not anything beyond, you know, sort of old school basic UR. When we add that into what the TPA charges, oh, guess what? We come up with a number in the high 30s. So when I go apples to apples, I come back to that high 30s target number, and the TPA is not such an outlier as it seems. Now, of course, you could be competing against a TPA that doesn't use a Buca network. They could be using a rental network or a regional network, a local network, that costs a hell of a lot less than $17 or $20, right? But that gets into a whole nother discussion about whether or not you competing against that kind of a network. And I was trying to put this more on an apples-to-apples basis because I would make the supposition that your networks are much closer aligned from a competitive position to the BUCAs than they are typically would be to a rental network. Is that fair? Anybody disagree or want to?
Maybe one comment on that, Rick. I would not disagree in our core service area, our proprietary network service area. I think where we still have a disadvantage, and we'll probably speak about this over the next few days, or a couple of days, is when you get to the national network side.
Yep.
This is where some employers feel like that fee is worth it to gain access to the national network.
Yes.
So we're doing a lot of work with our clients on, you know, more narrow networks, tiered networks, even restrictive to one provider network. So as we're looking at ASO come down into the mid where they may not need the national network, have you seen any resulting impact on price? And is that network access coming down because they're restricting their networks?
So you're saying that if the network, if the TPA is using, you're on TPAs
either
now?
Either the TPA or the Blues or any of them. I mean, all these guys are coming out with, you know, much more narrow networks. As an example, you know, Horizon in New Jersey has got their Omnia network, which is very restrictive in terms of what's tier one and tier two. And
no,
it's trying to drive all those access fees down. So I'm just curious, you know, here and in other markets, are people seeing an impact on price due to a change? And the other thing we're starting to see, too, is a change in the pharmacy, where people are starting to consider, I'm going to boot out, you know, offering all the retailers. I'm just going to go to CVS or just go to Walgreens. And what's that doing to drive price down as well?
There's a session on network strategy, so drill down there. But I can tell you that from my experience, these BUCA leases have been hallmarked by their lack of flexibility and either inability or lack of motivation to go into a narrow network configuration on a lease basis. That's what I've observed. But I'm sure you'll hear more. I think it's a great question.
Can I ask when your clients are considering these narrow networks or when what's the price differential? Because, like, our owner, as an example, put in a tiered network this past year so that, you know, they're doing cost share with their employees. We took that idea to some of our other employers and to the broker community, and they're like, that's too complicated, you know? So I didn't know if there was a price point at which it becomes more appealing and they're willing to consider that complication, because that's what we get back is, tiered networks get really complicated. Members end up not knowing where to go and end up with a surprise. So,
yeah, so we actually have been able to.
It's going to be so smart, and I really want to get it on the recording.
So we've actually been able to assign a price elasticity to that. So we actually, when we test it at 5, 10, 15, and you start to see that willingness to switch around 7, 8%. And so that's the goal as they're putting these into place. If they can't hit somewhere between an 8 and 10% differential, then it's not worth it. If it's 2, 3, 4 points, it's not worth it. Now, on the pharma side, if you just go to a restrictive network, it's only giving you, you know, a handful of points, but they're still working on that piece to restrict it. But in aggregate, if I'm able to take a restrictive pharmacy and a restrictive network and hit 10 points, then you see people willing to switch.
Yes.
I'm going to piggyback on you, because I know that there's really a tendency to focus only on the admin side, but that's really sort of like the tail wagging the dog here, you know, because the real thing is those network contracts. I mean, most of the costs are the claim costs. So, and I have seen some of the larger and the BUCAs, if you will, maybe make some guarantees that you will save X percent, you know, off charges, whatever that means anymore. I don't know what that means, but at least they have it out there. So sometimes I think some of the challenge, this is real. It's something staring you in the face, but you can't forget that, hey, I'm going to be able to affect your claim costs because my network has. Hopefully that's true, folks. You know that because my owner is giving me better discounts than they're giving to my competitors.
Yeah.
Hopefully, and you would also have to think, and I've seen this before, that Blues network is still not, you're not getting the same discount that the Blues themselves are getting. There's differentials in the network that they'll let others access.
That would be an interest. That's going to launch us into a very interesting and different discussion. I will make a couple of comments about it, though. Again, validation from the market. I've been following this, let's say, it's been about 7 years since Anthem came out with its lease network program, and then the others have followed. The pricing on these access fees, by the way, the baseline pricing in this industry has been flat to down. There's downward pressure on pricing for basic administration, right? This pricing has gone up. And particularly in the last 2 years, the access fees to get into these national networks and Blues networks has gone up 30 and 40%. So I don't disagree with what you're saying, but the market is saying that the value of these networks is appreciated by buyers, particularly as opposed to some of the more traditional rental networks that have been out there in the self-funded community. So that's one point.
Rick, I've been sitting here wondering, how does average family size affect PEPM? Because in Tennessee, there's this big variation. Fewer and fewer mid-sized employers are offering benefits to family members, or they're not very rich, or they're surcharges. So family size is going to make a difference in the math, correct?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, perhaps I can take that question. That's one of the constant conversations that we have between finance and sales, because what sales is seeing in the market is that our competitors don't seem to be factoring in the average contract size to the same extent that our finance team does. And we're not arguing the math, but we are arguing the result. And one of my hypotheses may be that the slope of the line as to how much impact that average contract size has, where we're valuing that on a one-to-one basis, perhaps the competitors are valuing that maybe at 50% of that one-to-one basis. But that's a good question probably for all of you as to what are you seeing in your markets, because I know that we at Providence haven't really wrapped our head around that as of yet.
Yes.
One of the things that, you know, I've seen for years, and I know many in the room have too, is it seems like brokers, we talked about them earlier, it's so much easier for them to sell a BUCA product because they talk about these high discounts that they get in the facilities, inpatient, outpatient. What we found out is over the years, they use their best facility contracts and try to brush that across the horizon. And we know it's not true, that when you control the data, you can make anything, any numbers work. But when they talk about discounts being so deep at community-based hospitals, that we know there's no way those hospitals could survive at those kind of discounted rates, it just, I think, again, it's in the data, and it's how you get to it, and it's how you tell the story.
Yeah. All good points, and, you know, to go back to your point and to your point before, Brad's going to talk about this afternoon, some of these issues, that how it all sort of comes together with the claims. I'm more focused here on the benchmark of the pricing, but clearly the psychology of this and the buyer's view of it is very important as to discounts, as to, you know, the relative, how you contain costs. And Brad will go into that some more, and we have some other speakers on that. I just want to add one more comment back to your point about are they getting the best discounts. There's a lot of gamesmanship, no doubt, a lot of gamesmanship, and a certain amount, lack of transparency is maybe a little bit of a loaded term, but let me just say it more precisely. In some of these networks, there are additional charges at the claim level that get tacked on that aren't fully reflected in this access price. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and that you have to peel back when you really want to compare what you're doing versus what some of these competitors are doing. But I still think these are valid numbers. As I said, they're market These are market numbers. These are what customers bought. So let me sum up where we are. We're still in the high 30s. We've now sort of made on an apples-to-apples basis. We've come up with the supposition that the market, as between a TPA offering a national or a BUCA network and the BUCAs themselves, are delivering prices in the high 30s to the market. So now, for some of you who are talking about 40s, 50s, 60s, you're still thinking, now, how do we get there? What's going on with that? Okay, so let's go to and take a look at that now. Remember I said that the price point I gave you was for core services, right? That the core service of doing administration, network access, and basic UR, that's basically what we consider to be part of the pricing that is in the market that I talked about in the high 30s. But potentially, there are all of these and probably more additional services that either are or are not included in that core package for your different competitors, right? Now, so again, this is some of my work from the studies I've done. And I'd be interested in your comments, and Brad will maybe have some comments too. These are the market prices I found in my work for each of these options that employers could buy in a self-funded ASO. And generally speaking, what I found in my work in looking at BUCAs and TPAs, that many of them were charged as an extra service, right? And some of them were included. And in many cases, there was variability as between plans and TPAs. So a really mixed bag. But up to, and again, this may not be all inclusive. There may be other services too. Up to about $16 of additional services that an employer could buy that might not have been included in that base package. So okay, well, now where are we? So in theory, we started at 38, 39. Okay, we could get here. We can get up to 55, right? You see that? So that I would submit to you, and obviously every case is different, every market is different, and it's very hard to generalize. But just under sort of the under a general heading of looking at pricing, when you talk about price points, 39, high 30s into the 50s, this is likely how that price moves up from one point to the other, right? Would you like to comment on that? Oh, sorry.
I don't know if you're going to talk also about setup fees, Rick. So new case like that, you have all kinds of additional costs where they can get you on that as well.
Next slide, yeah.
Quick comments on this. This pretty much mirrors what we look at when we price this out internally. Disease management is right about there. Our behavioral health expense is a little bit higher because we use a delegated entity for that. And then when you get to the interface fees, most of the TPAs will be charging these. And so we, as a what we call a bundled option, which I think Rick will talk about a little bit more, it becomes important when you're trying to price point yourselves against the market, against a fully insured program. So this becomes a nice segue. So remember the slide this afternoon. Make sure that you're identifying each and every one of these services that you're providing as a fully insured carrier or as a bundled ASO program when you're comparing yourself to these various options that employers have, because it can make all the difference in terms of what that net fixed cost is.
I don't see up here, but a favorite one of mine is ID cards.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you want an ID card?
Right.
You know, benefit. Or, you know, you want to know your benefits?
Yeah.
You know,
and
those,
no, you're right. I forgot that one.
Well, and the interesting aspect of those types of miscellaneous fees, and again, I'll talk a little bit about this afternoon as well, is that those can be awfully difficult to identify. If you ask a current employer who's self-funded what they paid for those fees last year, most of the time they won't know. And so they become kind of hidden fees unless their finance department is really on it in terms of what they're paying that TPA.
Yes.
So, and I'm not sure, I'm
not sure how you're thinking about us using this. I just know that there's very few of these things that we would be able to line item out and then not do.
Right.
If the employer said, oh, well, that's great, just take disease management and manage behavioral health out.
Yeah.
I don't know that we could administer it that way. So do you guys have any thoughts in terms of, are you just suggesting we use this to understand our price point and if we're competitive? Or is this how you have to go to market in order to sell the value of your total price? We're sort of, and I'll just add this, in the ASO-TPA conversation earlier, one of the things that we tell them, our ASO customers, is that we run your health plan as if it were ours. You get the full advantage of all the managed care work that we do. We don't rule anything out. We give you everything we would do for a fully insured member. Part of the reason we do that is because we can't, in many cases, line item these things out and not do them.
Yeah, a couple quick comments on that. That's absolutely true. We, at the outset of our ASO programs back in 2002-2003, weren't quite sure whether we wanted to be an ASO or a TPA, and at the time we probably didn't even really understand the difference between the two, but we quickly learned when customers asked us to start turning off some of these services. DM, as an example, we had one major client in Alaska ask us to turn this off, and we did, and we were fairly successful with that. That was relatively easy to turn off. But then when they wanted to carve out medical management, which was somewhat of an affront to us because that's part of our core value prop, right?
Yeah.
We said, well, if you really want to, sure. But what we quickly discovered is it was much harder to turn the stuff off than it was just to leave it on and not charge them for it. And so within a period of 5 years, we pretty quickly transitioned to, yes, we're an ASO, we're not a TPA. And while we do display these on a line item basis, because most RFPs or most quote requests from a broker or an employer will ask for it, we're very clear about what it is part of our package. We will not turn it off. And there are some optional services, but very few. I think our struggle, and this might be a good conversation to have at the break or over lunch, is I'm not sure if that is an impediment to us in that mid-market segment where employers are selling to fixed cost because we can't turn it off and a TPA can. You know, we're viewed as less flexible, but there is a value prop around why we do what we do.
Yeah, I'd like to add a few comments. I think it's a great question. I think the answer is think of the spreadsheet. That's where you're going to end up when you bid it. You're going to end up on somebody's spreadsheet. And if your bid looks like it has all the row headings and you just includes, and you get to the bottom and it says $55. And the other guy's looks more like a menu, and the base price, you know, let's say is $35, and then options. And so one of the things that I would recommend to any client is, even if you can't unbundle the service, unbundle the price. Because if you are charging something like $3 for a robust disease management program and you can demonstrate some of the ROI from that, I think it puts you in a much stronger position than, I'm exaggerating a little bit here, but than just saying sort of take it or leave it. I think that when you put the price on there and get it on the spreadsheet, you will find that, number one, potentially that the customer may value it more when it's viewed that way. And secondly, as against the competition, you may be in a more similar position. So one of the pricing studies that I've done recently, one of the findings that I had that surprised me a little bit was I found that pretty consistently that the BUCAs were not bundling in disease management and managed behavioral health. That was not happening. So. And I'm talking about like robust disease management, not disease management light, robust disease management. That would not have been true 5 or 10 years ago. They would have been all in, you know, all inclusive. But we are seeing more and more flexibility at the BUCA level, and of course TPAs are quite known for being flexible. So anyway, if you can unbundle services, at least unbundle the pricing.
I would say that one way that we ran into this was with national accounts. We were able to be a great administrator and offer the network and the services locally, but they had a national disease management vendor. They had a national COBRA vendor. They had a national, you know, help nurse line. And so if we wouldn't have been able to piecemeal our services, even though it can be very difficult to turn those services off, we would not have been able to retain those clients in our house. So those are things you have to think about. And as a TPA or an ASO, my experience has been is you need to get a lot more nimble in that marketplace than you ever will in your HMO. And so you really need to think about, these are primarily very large accounts that you want to keep, and you're trying to benefit your system for many of us in this room. And so you have to try to, I called it when I came to the health plan 24 years ago, we're going to un-HMOize these
funny.
Benefits because they're very, you know, they're very unique. We have a specialized service unit that is dedicated to these groups, and they actually process claims and take calls. That's our dedicated model. The only thing you have to serve to these folks is your service. Yeah, you've got a great network discount, but many of the national accounts, if you want to retain that business, this is one way to try to do that, and they don't want to piecemeal the other services. So,
question in the back.
Yeah, so a comment and a question. So typically, in our experience, we see that a lot of the Blues don't do what we call managed care. They don't do it very well anyway. And that typically of our HMO partners, that's a strength. That's what they do. They bring the whole package to the table. They help to save you money and so on. Where the disconnect appears to be is in showing the difference between your, let's call it your aggregate claims under your plan versus under the Blues. Because as Tom indicated earlier, the Blues will extrapolate discounts all over the place. And it does appear that sometimes they also will take back some of the savings associated with the discount. And that's not showing up in, you know, in some of the pricing models that they show you.
Yeah.
So, and I'm looking, I know you're focused on the ASO fees at this point, but to me, the bigger argument and the thing that you have to convince the client of is we can save you money on this giant piece of the business that you may not be looking at, and that is your aggregate. Now, how do you differentiate that between yourselves and the Blues? Because as you know, the Blues have a good story to tell.
Yeah.
Using their national network, even though time and time again we see it's not priced out the way they claim it would be.
Yeah, I think Brad's going to go into that this afternoon. We're kind of doing this, yeah, baby steps here. Yeah.
Is one way to handle that type of thing where you're trying to prove value on an aggregate medical basis to lower the initial TPA price but then offer a bonus or have them sign on to a bonus if you keep medical costs under X?
Yeah.
I mean, that way you're getting the fees for the network value you bring and all the rest of that stuff to the table.
That's a great question. We've used that exact same financing model before to pull over clients that were more interested in the fixed cost. We said, okay, we'll quote you the $35 baseline TPA fee, and if we're able to sustain trends for you at something less than a benchmark trend, and there would be thresholds, we would earn back what we felt should have been the admin fee to start with. And if we failed, we just paid out like a slot machine, like the, well, maybe that's, maybe like an ATM, you know, like a TPA will, then we only deserve the $35. But if we can earn back up to, in this case, it was $15, we would get our $50 PEPM admin fee. And that helped us win one of our largest cases with that model.
Do they have cognitive dissonance after the fact? When they have to pay the bonus, or they ticked off?
No, interestingly, because it was a public entity, they asked us to charge them the full amount to start with for budgeting purposes, so we actually held the money. And over the years, it evolved such that the reporting, and they changed consultants, and they kind of thought, well, you know, that's nice, but can we negotiate something else? And so we were able to basically negotiate our way out of the incentive for a large part of it and back to the original fee that we were requesting. Yep.
not sure this is going to happen, but it seems to be emerging in our market that there's a new line item, and that is managing value-based management. And now I have to define that because that word means so many different things. Value-based in the sense of actually improving clinical protocol, like in your case with your owner. And that will that could have a tremendous return, but you have to manage that, and there has to be a fee to manage that.
Yep.
And so in our market, there's this idea that we now are moving into a clinical protocol management sort of service.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yes. While you get waiting for the microphone, but
I can do mine while he's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, please.
A little hidden. I had a question about customization.
Yeah.
Do you just assume when you're setting these up that it's going to be a customized benefit design, or does the base assume that they're using a currently configured plan and it's extra for a customized benefit, and then tack onto that customized network? Because especially if you're looking at a healthcare client, you know, there's a good chance that they might want to carve a competitor out of the network if you're kind of situation. Do you see fees for that?
Great question. And by the question, I can tell you're from the finance area.
He's an actuary.
So my finance friends will ask us to quote standard product, right? And in an ASO environment, there is no such thing. You've seen one ASO, you've seen one ASO. We assume going into that it's going to be a customized product for each and every employer we sell. Yep.
So one other consideration,
sorry,
especially as you guys think about what size of the market you're at. So I definitely agree if you're starting to deal with very large, but if you start to dip into the mid-market, one of the things that we're starting to do with our clients is not necessarily line item, but actually put together almost packages or bundles, so it's harder to price compare. So maybe you have a wellness bundle that includes wellness maternity and something else, a health and productivity management bundle, a administrative, which might include COBRA, HIPAA, et cetera. So we always say, and we kind of take that from the consumer package world, is the best way to not compete is to just kind of put it in a different package so they can't price compare. So think about, as opposed to line iteming everything you have here, are there logical bundles? And we've even done stuff like there's a bronze, silver, gold, right? So the idea is bronze has a certain level, but if you can get them to buy up to silver, you're actually better off than piecemealing it of everything you get in bronze and then adding a couple components. Or like, you know, when you buy a car, there's like the basic car, the, you know, mid-sized car, and then the high-sized car. So there's a lot of things you can do, because I don't even see the full list on here, of organizing it into like bundles and selling it as a package, and it gives you a lot more ability to flex your price because certain things can offset others and compete that way.
Yes. Oh, okay. We got to move along. Okay, so wait, there's more, as the guy says on TV. So, in addition to optional services, I like to think of this, I like the bundle modular idea, that's great, but a traditional way of thinking about it is base core services, the options that we went through in the last slide, and then these are all some of the other charges that I think it was alluded to before that can be a little bit less transparent, and we won't have time to go through all of them, but there are other revenue pockets in ASO, in self-funding, that add to your top line in addition to whatever it is that you're explicitly charging as a upfront fee, and these are some of them. And of course, one of the big wild cards here that we won't have time to talk about is rebates. You know, somebody mentioned before prescription drug rebates. So I mean, that can change the equation. It can be used to artificially. Well, it can be used to lower your fees, right? It's a trade-off kind of thing. And as can all of these other charges that are underneath the base pricing. So, the big message here, or at least one big message here, is old school ASO is like, there's many analogies, but I'm saying it's like a prefix menu in a fancy restaurant. It's like, you want to come here and eat dinner? This is what you're having for dinner, and this is how much it costs. You have first course, second course, and dessert, and it's $20, right? That's old school ASO. And I think, so what I'm saying is, if that's where you are, it's going to be tough to compete in where the world is moving, where the ASO world is moving. The book is being more and more flexible, doing more and more customization of their offering, and moving towards what the TPA world looks like, which I said is like a Greek diner. Right? Everybody, anybody been to a Greek diner, you know what the, right? Now, what did you say before? DHMOizing? Was that you that said that? Un-HMOize. I don't think we need to un-HMOize to the extent that we become like a Greek diner. But somewhere in between this menu and this menu, you know, there's a position for you in the market where you can be competitive, where you can start to hit the price points in the high 30s or with some additional services that you want to offer into the 40s and so forth. Yes. Oh.
Yeah, when we talk to our clients, the big thing many times is this whole issue of who is the competitors that you're going to go against. You know, are you going to take a TPA strategy, buy a TPA, work with a TPA, and go after those lower cost, customized deals, or is your primary competition going to be the BUCAs and competing against them, and then you got to follow more what they're doing. So it's this market, looking at the market at the beginning is the key of who are you going to go against, because it's totally different strategies if you're going to go after traditional TPA business or if you're going to go after the BUCAs.
We've known each other long enough that it's like a mind meld. That's exactly where I was going. So, yeah, the value proposition, the classic value prop for a TPA, that low price point, the flexibility, the a la carte menu, now that they have access to the BUCA networks, and, of course, the very much the relationship-driven nature of their business models. That's what you're positioning against. And then on the BUCA side, we talked about some of this, and I think we can't, I think we mentioned all of these things, and of course stop loss will be covered by Brian later, but that has to be in the back of your mind when you're coming up with the price point is, what's your value proposition relative to these value propositions? Yes.
Another thing I've seen, at least with the BUCAs, and which some of you may want to consider, is they're willing to put some of their admin at risk. But except the at risk that I've seen is more like answering a telephone call within X number of things or resolving something within X. It's not really so much as the managed care or trying to deliver an ROI and on those kind of things. But that might be another way too of lowering that cost.
Yeah, service level guarantees. Yes.
Sorry, but I mean this is the pricing one, so this is where my questions are going to be, but. You mentioned you didn't have time to go into the RX rebate, but can you just briefly explain what that line item represents? Like, is that whether or not the client gets their rebates or whether you keep their rebates?
Right.
Or what do you intend that row to mean?
We find in the market, and anybody can comment, in the market we find a continuum of zero pass-through of rebates to 100% pass-through of rebates, and whatever the monetary value of that is used to offset the pricing, right? So,
right.
And there are carriers who will move that dial wherever you want it, and basically it's used to offset the pricing.
Okay.
And we're one of those carriers that does that, so we go out typically with 100% of the rebates passing through to the plan sponsor.
That's your default?
That's the default.
Okay.
But it has a little higher price point. But if they're fixated on the fixed costs, and they want the lowest fixed cost pricing, we'll keep the rebates, and lower the price for them. And we've had a couple clients do that. We own our own PBM that we sell to other self-insured employers on a carve-out basis. We sell it to health plans as well. So what we do, though, is we show them the reporting each quarter. Here's what your rebates would have been had you selected the 100% rebate option. Every single one of those clients has moved back to them keeping the rebates.
So there is an administrative fee difference as well. It's not just the one-to-one with the rebate cost.
And that depends on how your finance department wants to price it. But yes, theoretically, there'd be one-to-one. But there's some risk assumption that you as the plan are taking, or I should say you as the TPA or ASO carrier are taking, because you're making an assumption about future rebates in reducing your admin cost. There is one other component of that, though. So the admin fee is the easy part. The more difficult part is for true PBMs especially, but also when you start talking about United, some of the Blues plans, their rebate pass-through isn't what we would consider a full rebate pass-through. They keep a portion of the rebates as a rebate administration fee,
right?
But they don't necessarily disclose that. And so,
and I think there's been some news coverage of that recently about them taking some heat and not being transparent.
Correct. And so as an example, we just moved a client of about 10,000 lives on a PBM-only contract, which we were benchmarking against Optum, and the client took their rebates for the past year, lined them up against ours, and ours were 6 times higher than theirs, even though they were theoretically getting rebate pass-through. Now, part of that is the contracts that we've negotiated, but I'm not supposing that I'm 6 times better than Optum. I might be a couple times better, but they're taking part of the rebate action.
I think they're 6 times better than Optum. Okay, so we're finished. We covered mostly bundling, you know, the Greek diner menu and the prefix menu. Some of these other issues that bear on it, we're going to cover in other sessions. Hopefully you got some good information out of this. Basic takeaway is think about the flexibility in pricing, think about unbundling, think about all the different components, all those little dials that you can move to get to the right price. And I think you can and will get there. So thanks a lot. And thanks to my partner, Brad.